Welcome back to Hash Rate Up. Today is a very special episode. I am here with my good friend, all the way from Cape Town to Latvia, Yannis Varkals. Did I pronounce that correctly, Yannis? Yes or no?
Pretty sure you did it correctly, and thank you for pronouncing it as you were a native Latvian.
Yeah, I try my best. Hash Rate Up, hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with Hash Rate Up. So we are recording at 919339. I managed to read that without my glasses. Oh, the mempool is empty as hell. Last pool, end pool was the last pool to mine the block. Nothing unusual here. F2 via BTC, Foundry, F2, F2 Foundry. That still needs to somehow diversify itself. We are recording and hash price is $48. We are firmly above the one zettahash range, firmly increasing hash rate all the time. 1.1 zettahash now over the last 7 days, which is crazy. It seems like hash rate is still growing, even though hash price is down. Previous adjustment was nearly 6% to the upside, and now with the drop in Bitcoin price to nearly 110, we see the estimated difficulty adjustment coming in at 3.28. Any listener who is listening on audio, I always recommend going on video. It's just because there's more to see than there is to hear often. No, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot to see. Let's just leave it at that. And to anybody who sort of has all the question marks in their head about all the numbers that I just read out, please have a look at all my Hash Rate Up focus episodes, which I try to do to explain some of these basic contexts like hash price and difficulty adjustments and hash price moving up and down and what happens if it does. But without further ado, let's get back to our interview. Yannis, you are in Latvia. You are doing business development at Power Mining. I want to talk to you about containers today, even though you can see in the background of your video, you guys do some BitX work as well. I see we talked about it in the pre-interview, all the beautiful shells of miners that you bought to harvest for chips to produce BitXs in Europe. But today we want to talk about containers. Before you do, do you want to give yourself 30 seconds to introduce yourself briefly, please?
Briefly, I am working with Power Mining since 2019. So we've been through bears and bulls already a few times, and the good thing is we are not bankrupt. We're pretty steady in that case. it's been a fun ride, and I think there's a lot more ahead, especially during all of this adoption, and that people are not seeing us in general as an industry, that as a scammer industry. So we've grown definitely, yeah, in that sense. So it's way easier nowadays to talk about what I do or we do than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, I can echo the same, even though I wasn't around 5 years ago, but it's definitely getting easier, and people are more easy to talk to about Bitcoin mining, that's for sure. All right, so Yannis, the first question I have for you around the containers is design and market addressability, right? So on the one hand, you guys want to make a somewhat standardized product, but on the other hand, all the mining setups are very different. So how do you balance those two? What do you make sure when you build your containers, what do you make sure of when designing them, that you sort of balance the market addressability out as well as the individual needs of your customers? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty good to start with why Power Mining is born and why we have the name Power Mining, although we are not a mining company in general. We were a mining company, and this is where the containers come from. So we were a mining company. The owners' basements, when they were mining, were overheating. Their friends' basements were overheating. So they needed some bigger space to grow. So that's how the containers grew. They made the first containers for themselves, and people started buying them. So that kind of was the first part where power mining entered into manufacturing. And that's why we could proudly say it was from miners for miners. We knew what is needed, although we were mining. Although we are not mining anymore, we are now in close touch with all the miners. We like to visit our customers in variety of areas. So Kenya, where we met also, that's one of our containers. Very beautiful place. One of the most beautiful places where our container is. Also Norway, Sweden, Finland, Germany, US, some other maybe, Kazakhstan. Like all those places, we gather the customer feedback, except the price. So, but like the pricing of easiness of maintenance and durability for their environment is basically always on top of our heads.
But when you
so that's the priority.
Mm-hmm. So when you design a container for a place like Kenya versus designing a container for Germany, is it the same product?
Depends. In a lot of cases, it depends on the customer. So whether the farm is managed or unmanaged, is it a remote one or is it a well attended with a 24/7 staff on site? Also the environment, does it need hot air recirculation or it doesn't? So what kind of, is it sandy or is it salty? Is it a lot of pollen or is it rocky? Like a lot of like those small details that at the end of the day, if you pay attention close enough, then actually by knowing that, you can manage the temperature and airflow a bit better, thus increasing your hash rate performance, which then benefits your wallet.
Understood.
So details.
Is that a matter of just choosing a different filter, for instance, or do you change the whole design to make sure there's more volume going in and out and stuff like that? Like how modular and how configurable are the containers that you guys produce?
So they are very configurable, as we might think it is kind of all the same or more or less the same. Still, till date, we haven't had two the same projects, like exactly the same. They are all alike. It's still air cooled. It's still basic principles. It's still hot cold and it needs fresh air and it needs power. So from those principles, it remains the same. But the small details and also like the accessibility or likeliness to the local engineer is also sometimes important that he accepts it welcoming, not by objecting of these implementations. So, and we're pretty proud of that because, so German engineers accept us.
Yeah, they have high standards. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. And so, I mean, you guys produce your containers in Latvia, right? You source the basic container in Latvia, and then you build it into a mining container, and then you sell the finalized product. Why do you guys choose to manufacture in Europe? And what competitive advantage does that bring you?
A great question. So I have tried reaching out to other, let's say, white label manufacturers in other parts of the world to decrease the price. What we noticed first is that lack of communication, or actually the language barrier, is pretty important, as we wanted to explain what kind of standards we want to have implemented, especially towards electrics and, let's say, just a basic thing like diameter of a cable. They say it's enough with 1 millimeter. We don't agree. So, so the control of the process. We have control basically of all our processes here, including PDUs, distribution panel manufacturing, all the things that we can source here or from the other European manufacturers. But I would say that more importantly, the question goes to now rather than, it's not more towards what kind of other configurations there are, but what kind of new models are coming in. And that was the big swift or change from the S19 to S21 model, which was more powerful, a bit bigger, but that screwed up the whole calculation that we had. So we had to think a bit differently, and basically now to get back on the capacity that we had to redesign the shelving system. We had to redesign the PDUs. We had to redesign the distribution panel, the cables, everything, basically from scratch. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And we also noticed that other manufacturers were not really sure what to expect before the S21. So it was like quite recently when it was launched. And we knew the details online, but nobody knew how exactly it's going to impact the layout.
Okay, so you're saying you're basically having control over the manufacturing process or being more direct with it gives you the ability to change the way you're building your containers, obviously, a lot quicker. You're more adaptable. So you already spoke to sort of the communication barrier. Oftentimes, you know, if a product is made in the EU, on face value, it's like, you know, now it's going to be a better quality product than something that comes from Asia. Is that still the case today? Like if you buy a mining container in China, how close in quality are they getting compared to your units?
So there are a lot of good manufacturers out there as well. So China's market for these kind of components and product in general has grown significantly in the past, let's say, 5 years. They have really gained up on us and in general to Europe towards the quality. And this where it gets more complicated for us. So because they are very competitive, they're also very good quality. So price performance wise, they're really not bad. Mm-hmm. Really not bad. Where we still have the advantage is then the proximity to the mining site, as well as the service option and customer service option. So if in any case something happens, which still till date hasn't happened, we're open to go out to the farm and see what's there and do the repairs.
You know the BitX, the open source miner that everybody is talking about? At solomining.de, you will find the BitX, an absolute top quality built, made in Germany. Prefer a color display? That's the NerdX. If you want the real power, the Nerd QX++ with 4 chips is the one for you. All devices ship worldwide, ready to plug and play. Visit solomining.de to get started mining now. Okay, so, and this is, I mean, and I guess that's a bit of a regulatory moat around your product, right? So yes, probably the containers in China are cheaper, but then once they land in Europe, you have to pay import tax and all of that good stuff. So when it comes down to the bottom line, the difference in price between your containers and theirs are not that big. But what if that changed? Like, do you think it's enough to say like, look, we're close, we can send our engineers, if there's an issue, we'll make sure it's fixed, and all of that good stuff? Or is it also a matter of sourcing high quality components, breakers and cables and all of that stuff that, you know, the container kind of is evolving around to keep the units hashing controllably and with confidence, I want to say. So like, if you take away the 19% import tax or whatever it is, do you think you have enough room to compete, or is there innovation that needs to be done?
Well, 100%, especially. So nowadays, people are not thinking anymore that Europe can provide scale in manufacturing. But I would like to disagree to that, because as soon as we talk to our suppliers, because we also have suppliers, so we don't manufacture everything in-house. As soon as there is a scale to that, we can go down to the in pricing significantly, where it gets us very close to the Chinese end product pricing, especially when it already has to be imported and paid taxes for. So then we are maybe, I'm just saying maybe, that we have calculated perhaps 5% more expensive.
Okay.
So it's really not bad. So for these Bidexes that we are manufacturing, we are more or less top one or two manufacturer in the world from in scale. And we can beat Chinese prices as well because we have the scale.
Right. Okay.
The scale economy works in everywhere in the world.
Okay. Interesting. So you're saying with growth, the more customers you get, the more containers you are selling, the better the pricing gets.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
And if so, only there was just one perfect solution.
Yeah, there never
that we
is.
Can manufacture.
Otherwise, everybody would be doing it.
Exactly.
And it would be very boring.
And this was interesting. Remember in Kenya, when we talked there upstairs in the lobby, I asked the guy from Block, I think, and there was Marshall and other people, experienced people, great, great portfolio people, about what is their perfect mining farm. And that conversation wasn't short. So meaning that there is not the perfect mining farm. It's just that everybody has its own preferences. It's same like with the car. You know, you can have a car for your forest. You can have a car for your city. You can have a car for your kids. Which one is perfect?
Yeah, none of them. Fair enough.
All of them at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the market's big enough. We are not the biggest player in the market, but we're proud to be still alive, going forward, developing. So those were air cooled. And I would like to underline here also the part of hydros now. Hydros have given us the flexibility of also being part of the great Bitcoin idea that we can reuse the heat and actually provide it to homes or greenhouses or wherever. So this has been a significant development. We skipped the immersion part. There was an opportunity to do that with immersion, but we were never fond of that solution. But hydros, we love hydros. They're closed loop, no leakages, nothing. It's just, it's pure. It's not simple. In a way it is, but it is different. It is way different than it was. And it's way more complex. And yeah, when you're starting to get into these projects, it's really more institutional.
Okay, so
you already have some parameters, you have already some requirements that you have to match. It's not like you are in a range of 20 to 50. Precisely 50.
Question around the hydros. So is there anything about your container that helps miners or ASIC owners reach that 80% or 80 degrees Celsius target when it comes to the exhaust or the output heat? So just for context, a lot of this happens in Finland. And in Finland before, so the miners heat up the water. The water goes out of the machines, goes into a heat pump, and then that heat pump, increases the amount of heat through the use of electricity with the hot water that goes into it. And then it sort of gets transferred with a metal plate or heat plate transfer mechanism into the district heating grid. I am by no means an expert, as you can hear. But I know that the temperature coming from the miners needs to be around that 80 degree mark, which I think is in Finland also a regulatory target. Do your containers, first of all, is what I said correct? Do you know? And second of all,
It is partially correct, yes. it's good to have 80 degrees on the outlet. And we have, let's say, thanks to our customers and the trust they have put in us, we are happy to be a provider for their beautiful projects, and where they are heating more than 80,000 homes already with Bitcoin heat. So we're very grateful for that. And therefore, we have also some experience in that. Now we're working on our own projects here, including the Baltic states, where we intend to heat. Also cities, smaller municipalities, basically wherever there is a need for a bigger heat consumer, let's call it so. Either it's a district heating company or it's a factory, whatever, wherever the heat is needed. And we can control it. It's pretty flexible. We can have, so the miner manufacturer says the optimal or the starting ground for a miner on the inlet side is 20 degrees, only 20 degrees Celsius. But by actually increasing that temperature, you also are increasing the outlet temperature. And in some cities or smaller municipalities, it's completely enough with 70 degrees on the outlet, because they don't have it in the main district heating grid more than 70. So that is completely enough. And that's especially in the warmer climates, a bit warmer in comparison to Finland, that's Scandinavia. And we're still colder than Germany. But the part which is interesting is that there are variety of heat pumps. Different manufacturers, different requirements, different countries. And they can be, let's say, efficient also from a variety levels of temperature. What we can do with the miners is provide the first part of the heat so that they don't need to heat it up to, let's say, 70 degrees by just wasting electricity. They can now mine Bitcoin, get 70 degrees, and if the heating company needs more, let's say 95 degrees, it heats up with a heat pump later.
Okay.
But yeah, it's different from, let's say, project to project.
And I guess that's also, I mean, that goes to what we said earlier, right? So you guys selling containers in Finland also makes you, in being in Latvia, very close. So that definitely helps. Are you using, are your clients using MicroBT machines, you know, those rack format machines, 2U machines that you build your containers around, or is it Bitmain Hydro? What do customers choose there mostly when they buy your containers?
So mostly it is WattsMiner. I think Bitmain has released something like 3U, a bit bigger one, thicker one model. I don't have any information on that. So not real life tests. Okay. I was in Auradine testing site in Texas recently. By the way, Marshall. Beautiful. The machines are running great. We have ordered for our customers the first units. Hopefully they arrive next week. And then we will have real life data. But yes, we are in touch with the manufacturers about the temperatures, requirements, flow rates, whatever they need. We would like to have this close relationship to actually get the best service and actually push out the maximum out of the machine, hash rate and temperature. And sometimes it's a mix. Sometimes there are compromises between hash rate and temperature. Sometimes you have agreements with the district heating where temperature is the priority, not your hash rate. So if you want to sell the heat, you have to prioritize the heat, not the hash rate. So yeah, sometimes it's, you know, give and take. That's the business. But in general, the tendency is excellent. I would say very promising. This is what we Bitcoiners have foreseen and wanted to have for years.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100 Visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
I see sort of my with what you're saying, I see my thesis partly confirmed that we will see a lot of the efficiency gains on the flexibility of the miner and not so much in the sort of joule per terahash apartment. I recently had Sanjay Gupta on my show as well, which I'm sure you've met.
Really? Excellent.
Yeah. And he talked about his Auradine or the Auradine machines, you know, being more flexible and being adjustable to how much heat they put out and stuff like that. And then it's not so much about the, you know, is it now 10 joules per terahash or 9.5 or 9, but it's about, can I use my ASIC to the best of its ability for the scenario and setup that I'm in? Because we're kind of moving away from full blast air cooled like mining, you know, to, okay, now we have like this special setup in Finland. We need this outlet temperature and we have this and this much heat that we can sell. So it becomes more specialized. And I think that's also where power mining has an edge, because you're very close to that market and you can react a lot quicker to demands there, right?
Yes, we are. But I'm actually, when we're talking about miner manufacturers, I'm very glad that there are new players on the market, that we don't have only, let's say, Chinese manufacturers only. Yep. We have a choice of some also American. I'm very much looking forward when there will be a European company that we can have. But let's see when that comes.
The floor is yours.
It must come.
I mean, you're already doing, you're doing BitXs already. You're close. It's not.
Yes, we have, as a team, we have thought about it, but the investment is great. It's significant.
Yeah. And, now, and those, now you got to raise money.
Those ships.
Yeah. Now you got to raise money and wear suit and tie. And then the question is, do you really want to do that?
And yeah, exactly. And then the question about how will you protect your chip developer? So in case something happens to him,
yeah,
oops. That's it. Your millions are gone.
Yeah.
So it's fun. And let's mention also Canaan. I want to mention also Canaan. They're coming in strongly as a publicly listed company from Singapore. I think they're based. So they're coming in strongly in the market. So we will see in the near future a very good battle. Because competition makes us all stronger, right?
100%, man. We have to welcome it for sure. That's what I've been saying as well, exactly. Before we close out, Yanis, I want to talk to you about your PDUs and your monitoring. Let's start with PDUs. Why did you guys choose to build them and sell them? And same questions there. What makes them special over, just buying off the shelf PDUs elsewhere?
Mm-hmm. A quick question. Do you have our PDUs somewhere as a miner?
I mean, I do.
None.
But not in my house.
All right. Yeah, all right. Not lying around, but they're working, right?
They're working.
So since we have firstly designed them and made the first unit, it is still operational. So it started working with S9 and M30s. And then through M50s, and now to whatever other miners are coming, like it's still hashing. It's the same PDU. It's durable. It's like old Land Cruiser, right?
When you
you buy it for life,
you never fix it once. When you design the PDUs for S9s, were you designing them for different amperage? Oh, this gets very nerdy. Were you designing them for different amperage than, now we have miners pulling 3.5 kilowatts versus 1.3.
Mm-hmm.
So what difference, if you say it's still operational, did you foresee that miners would draw more power, or what makes the PDU still applicable today?
Not 100%, but yes, towards that. We just have very strong feelings about, let's say, electrical cables heating up. So we install them with a big reserve And when basically miners rose from S15 to S19, they could still have used the same PDUs just because we had the reserve.
Yeah.
And now, so let's mention the 12-port 63-amp PDU that is the most widely spread around the world. And I'm not kidding. It's like from Norway to Africa to Venezuela. So they are pretty everywhere.
Yes.
So what happens now when we have a 20-amp miner in comparison to the previous 16 or 15 yeah. amps at max? So we're using the same PDU. We're just installing 30% less miners. So instead of 12 miners, you can now run 9 S21s.
Are you hinting
but
at
it's
the...
It's still the same one.
Are you hinting at the Protorix?
Yes, we can power those as well. Yes.
Why do you say 20 amps?
Or up to 20 amps. That is S21.
Okay. Wow, yeah. I didn't know that.
Those
I thought
are
they were
around
also
17.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, so just maybe to explain to the viewer or listener, right? So voltage times amperage makes for the wattage. Usually the voltage is fixed at 230, 240, depending on where you are. And so that means if your miner is drawing more power, now the amperage level is higher. As Yannis just said, it goes from 16 or from 12 to 16 to 17. And the more amperage, the more current you have going through the cables, the thicker it needs to be in order for the cable not to heat up as much and the resistance inside the cable not to become too big. Because if that happens and the cable gets too hot, then the cable burns through and it's bye-bye PDU. See, that rhymed.
It was excellent. You are an artist, electrical artist.
Yes. And that's really interesting that you have them running for so long. Okay, cool. So quality PDUs also available at Power Mining. Mm-hmm. I'm running some of them in Africa myself. I'm a customer. The PDUs are great. The miners are not so great, but let's not talk about that. And the monitoring, Yannis, tell me about that briefly. Before I ask you to close out
the monitoring,
So what do you do there?
Like for remote monitoring, you mean?
Yeah,
but depends on the customer what he requires. But like basic things, electrical meter that you can actually power meter in the main distribution panel that you can actually monitor through the app. But we have also some Grafana data through that you create from the data that is sent by Modbus from the container, and there are temperature sensors, humidity sensors connected to it. Actually, what it does is not only informs you about the temperature itself, but also when the miners have, or the filters have to be changed. So if you see the temperature increasing weirdly, change your filters.
All right. So you basically have, you mentioned an app, you have a power mining app.
It's a quick cloud that we made up so that you can actually follow your data in a beautiful graph. So it's nothing high tech, but it does its work.
All right, cool, awesome.
It's going to be way more complex for the hydros, that's for sure, because we have more things to meter there and regulate. So that's going to be fun. And then. May I mention this as power mining, as we're talking?
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
So let me
mining, right?
Let me just ask you to close it out. Exactly, tell people where they can find more about your company, what your website is, and what else you guys are up to. For sure, go ahead, take it away.
Oh yeah, so we're a lot is up to, but for now we kind of started this project just this year. Basically the end of last year. Like year has passed since we're on the open source project now. So we started with the BitX because it was open source, a miner that you can manufacture. It's a home solo mining unit. Someone calls it lottery miner, which is you can really take part in Bitcoin lottery, which is, you know, per block, every time a new block is made, your device might be the one that actually gets the hashing correct. So yeah, we have several varieties. One is this one, one chip from the real miner. It's the same chip as in this one, bigger. Then we have also this one. This one has four chips, and it's also open source. This is kind of why it's easy to manufacture, because somebody already made the design. But what we do is that we kind of improve it with packaging, with perhaps some better thermal paste, better PCU, something that actually would be durable for European homes and they wouldn't burn down, which is important for us and our reputation. That's before we sell anything, our reputation comes first also. Oh, safety and reputation, kind of. They're all are aligned. By the way, your Bidex, is it hashing?
It is hashing. Yep.
Excellent.
It's what's the best difficulty you've hit? I can't show it now because it's tied into my messy cupboard. But it is
all right.
It is where but I put it first.
If time. I recall correctly, that is from this spring or
December, I think. Last December, Slovenia, NiceHash conference is where you gave it to me. For sure.
And it has been running since then.
No, I've had some issues. I had I had to put new thermal paste on, but and I think I messed something up also in the configuration where I put the wrong, because I like to fiddle, so I put the wrong voltage levels in, and then it got too hot, and I made some mistakes because I couldn't stop playing around with it. So it's the BitX is not just exactly, a good product to start mining yourself at home, but it's also a good way to get a bit more technical, you know, without having to buy a whole shoebox.
Exactly. This is where you play around. This is really good educational tool.
Yep.
My friends, a lot of friends have bought it just because, you know, I've talked about Bitcoin for so long, and at last they can have a Bitcoin miner on this table.
For sure. No. For me, it's a big conversation starter. So a lot of people that don't understand at all what I'm doing, they don't take the time to listen to YouTube or whatever. But they, if they come to visit our house, or you know, your family, friends over, and we sort of give them a tour or whatever, and they see the BitX, they're like, "Huh, what is that?" You know, and then that's your conversation starter right there. You just got to put it into a prominent. If you want to talk about Bitcoin mining or Bitcoin in general, just make sure you put that thing somewhere prominent in your house where people can see it, and you'll have a conversation in no time.
Right, I agree, 100%. So that's why my wife takes it away when people come on. So that I don't talk.
We're not doing
talking
this
about it straight away, right?
We're not doing this today.
Yeah.
All right, Janis. Cool. Tell people where they can find more about power mining, and then we'll close it out there.
This is funny. I think this is my first podcast ever, so it's kind of hard to grasp for me that there will be more people behind the screen. So it's interesting. our website is powermining.io. Happy that you can visit. BitXs can be bought there. We ship pretty quickly out.
Nice. You also have a great
and Jesse,
Twitter.
Thank you very much for the invite.
You have a Twitter too?
Yeah.
You want to plug it?
It's powermining. Yeah, you can. It's powermining. Farm, if I'm not mistaken.
We'll put it in the show notes. Don't worry. We'll put it in the show notes below, and then people can have a look and click on a link. Make it easy for them.
And by the way, I can send you maybe some pictures of when we talk about PDUs, then from the factory.
Yeah, for sure.
Wherever.
Yes. Send me all the pictures for sure. Absolutely, Janis. Let's close it.
Might
out
be
here.
Useful.
Absolutely, it was a pleasure talking
Jesse,
to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. This is awesome.
All right. Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ciao.